Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to the Shir this evening. We are approaching Parshas Truma. This evening, I would like to speak about the parochas. First, we'll speak about the parochas, you know, the curtain that hangs in front of the Aron. We'll speak about it as it was built for the purposes of the Mishkan. Then we'll figure out a little bit more about the parochas as it existed in the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll try to figure out what the story is with the parochas in our modern-day shuls. What the story really is. We are currently sitting at a Beis Medrash with a beautiful parochas in front of the Aron. And we'll try to figure out the halachic status of a parochas and end with some pretty amazing Divrei Hashkafa, Be'ezras Hashem from Soloveitchik, some Divrei Lamda, some Divrei Hashkafa. So here we go. The Torah says in Perichavav, Pasuk, Laman Aleph, Asisa parochas. What materials were involved, were used to make the parochas, the cheles, vargaman, v'talashani, v'sheish moshzar? So four different materials were used, and the Torah refers to the parochas as a ma'aseh choshev. Okay, fascinating. So the parochas was to be stood in front of the aron, v'nasat, tepezek, lamed gimel, as a parochas, tachas, korasim, meves, shama, bibes, la parochas. And here's the idea. So if I were to ask you logically, what is the primary function and purpose of the parochas in the Mishkan? What would you say? Yeah, what did I just read? That's it. Right, meaning the Torah first describes the way we made it and the hooks, etc., and the poles it was on. But ultimately, the whole point, says the Torah, is Veveza Shaman Bibes La Parochas, is Aron HaEdus, meaning you're supposed to put the Aron behind the parochas, and therefore the parochas will serve as a barrier between the Kodesh HaKadashim, where the Aron stays, and what's outside of the parochas, which is not the Kodesh HaKadashim. It's a Hevdel, it's a Mechitza between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadashim, black and white in the Torah. And Rashi says the word parochas literally means a Mechitza, that's what it means. Pargod, something that separates between the Melech, and the rest of the nation. Okay, very nice. So technically speaking, we'll just try to point out some technical Torah that we have to really try to tap into this time of year. In front of me, I have the most beautiful Sefer Melechas HaMishkan V'Kelev. I can't really give any shir on Parshas Truma without mentioning Rabbi David Myers. Right? David Myers is the author of the famous Sefer known as the Mishkan Illuminated, put up by Feldheim. It's a phenomenal sefer, one of the picture books, but it's written for Parshas Truma, which means if someone wants to know this week's Parsha really well, and you just learn that sefer cover to cover, you'll know the Parsha as well as anybody. And he also, Baruch Hashem, came out this year with the Big Day Kahuna illuminated. Now, for a beautiful Feldheim picture book to hit the shelves that makes these difficult Parshos accessible to the masses, with clear English and clear pictures and clear diagrams and labels, it starts out with a big fat book like this. This is an encyclopedia. So Rav David Myers first writes one of these. This is like an encyclopedia A to Z on everything you would ever want to know about the Mishkan. And then over time, he's able not to water it down, but to pick and choose which parts of this Eva should be kind of emphasized. And then he came up with the Hebrew version, HaMishkan B'Sivarta. And then eventually it turned into the Mishkan Illuminated, which is now on its third printing. And he came out with another encyclopedia Hebrew Lamdisha book on the Big Day Kahuna. And now it's on its first printing of the English version of it, which is available now for the masses. So it's an amazing, amazing work. And I believe I have spoken to Rav David Myers numerous times. And we're in touch. And again, he's a tremendous tzaddik in the Telus community in Cleveland. And I really cannot recommend his Sfarim enough. But what he does is he goes into tremendous detail on the literal, the dimensions of the Mishkan and the way they looked and how were they made, things that we wouldn't really think about. And let me give you just a little bit of a taste of that. The Torah described the parochas with the following order. Techeles, argaman, tola, sheni, b'sheish, mozar. The first material mentioned was the techeles. Now, there's a Netziv. The Netziv in this week's Parsha, in his commentary in the HaMikdavar, he says, whatever material is mentioned first in the Torah needs to be the primary quote-unquote ingredient, the material that was kind of emphasized the most in that particular kli. But that, at first glance, makes no sense, asks the Sivan itself, because mathematics will dictate the following. If you have four types of material, and there are six strands of them, so in quite a bit of the kalim, there are 24 strands of the exact same thing, the linen and the tcheles, you know. So if you take 24 strands of the same materials, can you really differentiate between any of them? Imagine the avnate, the you know, the sash, the belt of the Kohen Gadol. So there, the Torah does not put the tcheles first. Says the Netziv, if you look closely, you're going to look elsewhere, and you're going to find that by the avnate, it's different. What does the Torah say first by the avnate? It refers to the sheish, the pishtun, the linen. So the Netziv wants to argue like this. Every material was of a different thickness. And even if you have, let's say, the same recipe for the clothing, but because they were different levels of thickness, so even if you can have 24 strands of the same thing, but whichever one was emphasized apparently could create some form of difference. And therefore, when the Torah describes the paroches, the primary material was what? The tcheles.
You have this with clothes. If you have something that's 80%, 20%, 100%, so you always have this with blends. You always
with blends,
total,
right.
It's a different texture, totally.
That's exactly right. So that's exactly what the Netziv says. That you might argue that everything turned out the same if there were just 24 of the same thing, of the same strands, but no, the texture was different, and apparently you could emphasize one over the other. So this isn't a comment in the Netziv, that in the paroches, the tcheles was the ikur. Rav Dovin Myers, in his encyclopedic knowledge on this topic, says the Netziv is against the Tosfos and Masechet Shabbos, because there's an opinion in Tosfos where the Rish says the pishtun was only a quarter of the avnate, and it was batel, whatever the sugya is over there. And Rav Dovin Myers respectfully says to the Netziv that the Netziv's ha'ara is against Tosfos, because according to Tosfos, the pishtun was only a quarter of the avnate, even though the Torah mentions it first. So all of a sudden you have a machlokas on what was the emphasis in the avnate. So we don't even know like what that means technically, but I want to just point out, I wanted to give a little bit of a taste on how much attention is given to certain details when it comes to the Melachos of Mishkan. We often think, okay, there was a thing called the Parochas and there was a thing called the Menorah, Viter, go on. But then like you ask like, well, when there was a flower on the Menorah, like what did the flower look like? You know, and he'll go into tremendous detail. And here he goes. I just gave you a little example where he points out that according to the Netziv, the parochas' kind of like main material was the tcheles, because it's mentioned first. And Rav Dovin Myers just points out that's not necessarily true. Fascinating. Okay, I don't want to dwell on that, but I just wanted to give you a little taste of it. All right. So there is a Gemara Yushalmi, which quotes a Machlokas Tanaim. And this is another great example of Rav Dovin Myers. We'll just explain what might be going on over here. When the Torah refers to the paroches, it refers to it as a ma'aseh choshev. And Rashi says that means one side of the paroches was different than the other side. The two sides were not identical. So what does that mean that we're not identical? So there's a three-way machlokas tanaim. And the opinion of Chorana is similar to the Tanakam over there, where there was a picture of a lion on one side of the paroches, and on the other side of the paroches, there was a picture of a nesher, an eagle. Very good, A.B. But it's a three machlokas. One opinion says there was a lion on one side, and there was a lion also on the other side. And one person says, no. There was one side only was colored, the other one was blank. You know, all these different machlokas in over there. So Rashi goes with the opinion that there was one picture on each side and the two pictures did not match up. So what were the two pictures? Was it a lion and an eagle? So seemingly it might not have been. It might not have been. You could argue that it was just an example in the Gemara. Maybe it was a different creature, a different animal. How many were there? So in his sefer, he draws two lions on each side and two eagles on each side. But he pointed out that he asked the great Rav Chaim Kanievsky Zatzal for an insight on this. Like how many lions were there? Was it like, you know, 12, 1, 2? And Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, whoever made the Mishkan, like Bezalel, had his own right to decide how he wanted it to look. And it's okay for him to decide that. And that's where Rav David Myers calls it Yesod Gadol, meaning not every detail is hammered out, you know, pun unintended, when it comes to the Mishkan. As long as Bezalel followed the basic rules, so there was room for a little bit of creativity, a little bit of personal touch, so to speak. Wow. And that's straight Mesoah from Rav Chaim Kanievsky to Rav David Myers to my ears. I heard that on a Zoom call. Rav David Myers, and he has it here in a sefer. He has a whole section in the back of a sefer. Shalos Tshuvos Rav Chaim Kanievsky and a sefer. Unbelievable.
So
yeah.
We will never know exactly how it looks.
Yeah. And again, without saying this disrespectfully, it doesn't really matter, so to speak. Meaning, the Torah says it was a Masa Choshev. So that means, seemingly, according to Rashi and one opinion of the Tanaim, that there were two different images on each side. Okay. And it could have been a lion and an eagle. But we don't really know exactly all the details. And that's okay. That's not a problem. That's not like a chisaron. It's fair game, so to speak. Okay, beautiful. All right. I just also wanted to give a little bit more of like an imagery to the Mishkan. You know, because again, I always was afraid of Parshas Truma. You know, Bereishis you kind of have down when you graduate elementary school, middle school. And then, you know, Shmos and you know, Bamidvar, Devarim, you could kind of figure that stuff out. Vayikra and like Truma and Tetzaveh is a whole different league. And Truma and Tetzaveh especially, because without a visual aid, without pictures, you don't even have a clue what's going on. And it's true, there are many Svarim that are out there, but Rav David Myers was a game changer for me. A game changer. And I remember, I think I first took it out of the YU library for a Shabbos. I used to take Svarim out of the YU library all the time for Shabbos. One of the first interactions I actually ever had with Rabbi Yudin Shlita was in an elevator in the YU library, and I showed off some of the Svarim I was taking out of the library for the Mishkan of the Big Tikkun, and I said, Rebbe, these Svarim are just so helpful. And he was like, yep. It was like a classic, like, why you guys trying to make conversation with, like, a really big Rosh Hashiva in an elevator? And the Rosh Hashiva was like, yeah, like, wow, like, really great comment, man. They have, like, picture books are really helpful. Like, wow, like you're ever going to get a job in my shul down the road. Like, no chance, right? You know, whatever, you know, all right. Good times.
I had better conversation.
Oh, we'll get, yeah, oh, yeah, I'm sure you have, Amy. Don't forget, I have to tell you the famous story of how I made a fool out of myself in front of the great Rav Avigdor Nevensal Shlita by the end of the shir. That's my key story for the shir tonight. But there's a Mishnah Maseches Shkolim where Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, and then Rav Shimon ben Haskan, that how thick was the parochas? It was a tefach. Okay, this whole, again, Rav David Myers. Well, that's talking about the parochas in the Beis Hamikdash. Maybe the parochas in the Mishkan was different. Like all of a sudden, like all this ink is being poured out on how thick was the parochas in the Mishkan, right? Fascinating stuff. But this is a Mishnah Maseches Shkolim. And actually had to make a different parochas. And here they made two. We'll talk about that shortly. They had to make a different one each year. Does anyone want to take a guess why they always had to make a new parochas each year? What would happen to the parochas? Ah, so it would be very used, right? They sprinkle blood on it. The Melech Shlomo commentary on the Mishnah over there says they had to make a new one each year because they the ketores would blacken it. So this was a game-used stuff. If you were really bringing the ketores on Yom Kippur, so there was smoke and, you know, all that stuff, it's going to be dirty. So again, just to give you a little bit of a taste of the Beis Hamikdash, you know, after Parshas Truma, we should feel a little bit of Yerushalayim, just on our fingertips. Okay, so now let's move on a little bit. There is a fascinating, another distinction between the parochas that existed in the Mishkan versus the second Beis Hamikdash. Because all of a sudden there's a Machlokes Tanaim in Maseches Yumen and Aleph Amud Beis where the Mishnah describes the Kohen Gadol walking between two different curtains. Each of them was part of the Parochas and there was a gap between the two curtains of an Amah's width and the Kohen Gadol would just walk between them. And Rabbi Yossi disagrees respectfully to the Rabbanan and says there was only one parochas, not two. What does the Torah say in the six parshiv? Ivdila parochet in the singular, and that served as the mechitza between the kodesh and the kodesh gadashim. Don't tell me that there were two curtains. You know, as if there were two curtains with a space in the middle. There's only one curtain.
But there was no
parochet
in the first place.
All right, so the Gemara says, comparing the Mishkan and the second base of Mikdash, that there's a difference. That you're right. In the Mishkan, there was only one paroches. In the first Beis Hamikdash, there was a special wall, the Amatraxin. But in the second Beis Hamikdash, there was no Amatraxin. So they needed to cover that area with two different curtains. And there happened to have been an Amaz space between them. So again, just more imagery, just to feel that much closer to the Beis Hamikdash, where the Parochas and the Mishkan was one curtain, and it could very well be that there were actually two distinct curtains with a space between them in the second Beis Hamikdash. Okay.
But that's fine. Not a good thing. The second Beis Hamikdash was, it's supposed to be the first Beis Hamikdash.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know enough about the status of the Parochas and Amatraxin. The first Beis Hamikdash.
Amatraxin was the one that should be there.
Right. So you're good. I don't know enough about that. All right. But that's just to give us a little bit of imagery, ideally a taste of the Beis Hamikdash. Feel that, you know, with these great Sfarim, we could actually understand things that we never even thought about, or at least I never would have thought about before. But every year I'm just so inspired by the attention to detail that Rav David Myers really puts in his Sfarim. It's unbelievable. Okay, so let's talk about our day parochas now. So we have this parochas hanging on the Aron all over the place, right? So Rava, and Mesechem Zagilach of Vavam and Beis, he says, well, I would have thought that the Parisa was only Tashmish to Tashmish. So in Halacha, you have, let's say, a Sefer Torah. That is holiest. And then you have something that, like, touches the Sefer Torah. That's Tashmish to Kedusha. Similar, like, to your tefillin. That's, like, Kedusha. But what about the box that your tefillin go in? That's Tashmish to Kedusha. So Tashmish to Kedusha is holy. Something that directly touches the Sefer Torah. Something that directly touches your tefillin. But something that only touches that is already twice removed from the holy. So, yeah, so the tefillin bag or something like that. So Rava said, what's the parochas? It doesn't touch the Torah. It doesn't really come into context. It's only twice removed. There's only tashmish the tashmish. But then I saw that actually sometimes they wrap the Torah itself in the actual parochas. They'll take the parochas off the hooks and they'll use it like what we have a bima. They'll spread it around and they'll use it directly with the Torah. So actually, I changed my mind. It must be that the parochas is now Tashmish Kedusha. Wow. So you can't use it, as a blanket anymore because it has a halakhic status. So there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos where the parochas was. Rashi says it was a Yuriya Shaporsin Sevivo to Aron Bibifnim. It was in the Aron, But Tosfos says that makes no sense. If it was in the Aron, then why would Rava ever think that it didn't have the status of Kedusha? Rava is looking at this parochas and it's like, it's not really that holy. But if it's in the Aron, that's pretty holy. Tosfos says, I don't understand that Rashi could say that it was in the Aron, yet not holy. How could Rava ever entertain that? He doesn't think that makes sense. So, very good. No, but the Aron itself is holy, asked Tosfos. The Aron itself was Tashmish Kedusha. So how ironic would it be that, like, imagine if the Aron has the status of Kedusha, and then something even closer to the Torah than the Aron, what, is not Tashmish Kedusha? Meaning it doesn't make sense in Tosfos' mind to go backwards. Now, the Bach is going to disagree with this, by the way. But therefore, Tosfos disagrees and says, it must be that it was outside of the Aron. Because that's the only way that Rava ever would have entertained that the Parochas was not Tashmish to Kedusha, it must have been outside of the Aron. Now let's think for a second about our modern day parochas. Can anyone say whether we hold like Rashi or Tosfos? When you think of a parochas, is it something inside the Aron or is it something outside of the Aron? Pretty much always outside. What can you think of in a situation where it's inside the Aron?
Sometimes doors are outside the parochas, sometimes they're inside.
You can close a curtain and then close a door?
The upstairs.
Yeah, so the doors first close.
It's more like for security or just like when you're not using it.
Right, so those doors are not really closed. Right, meaning it's really just the Torahs and the parochas. And the parochas is outside. But maybe some of the more the makeshift, like kind of like Shiva house one? No, but still the parochas is outside. There's a door behind the parochas. So now all of a sudden we're asking. So let's say the standard American Aron is where you have Torahs inside, like a door or like, something that you slide open and close, whatever. And then there's a parochas. So we're pretty much Tosfos-like, that like the parochas is outside.
No,
okay.
There's a safe inside of that as well.
That and the safe would cover the parochas? I mean, would it be behind the parochas or outside of the parochas?
The aron itself has the safe inside.
Yeah, sure, I've seen that, yeah.
Where the wooden aron is around the safe and then the parochas is in front of that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. But outside. Okay. So the big question was as follows. So people wanted to make an aron really beautiful without a parochas. So let's say you have this beautiful wooden aron and the wood itself is gorgeous. So why would you cover it? The aron, and let's think about this for a second. If it already has doors, I can think of one particular base medrash in the world where there's a beautiful wooden aron with doors and no parochas on it. Is that a bad thing?
Why do you need a parochas?
Is that what I'm asking?
Do you want to be a dealer? No.
Ah.
Just to give an extra cover to the one who donates it.
Very good.
Very practical.
Very good. So the Torah, we'll talk about the Rav soon, but the Torah said the whole point of the parochas was to separate between the Kodesh HaKadoshim on the inside and the Kodesh outside. That's not what we're talking about anymore, right? But the Zera Emes. Zera Emes was a Rav in Italy, if I'm not mistaken, right? 1700s, if I'm not mistaken. So he says like this, Don't you dare. Try to make an arm without a parochas. Because the minag ha-parochas nira de'eno lenoi ba'alma. It's not just for beauty. Oh, what a beautiful parochas. It's litzni'ut yetera. What does that mean? And he even quotes this week's parsha as a halachic raya. V'hivdila ha-parochas. The parochas will serve to cover up the aron. Not just to serve as like a halachic barrier between there's like two zones. There's the Kodesh HaKodeshim on one side and the Kodesh on the other side, but it's literally just to serve as a covering.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's not just like you have a closet door closed, but because of the spiritual content that it represents, you want everyone to see the parochas and always realize, that's an extra level of separation that means.
That's it. For tzniyus, that's a key line. Exactly, AB. That's it.
No, two doors.
No,
it's like two doors.
Yeah, it's a second door. But the point is that AB is pointing out that what the Zera Emes is saying is
parochas because the Torah uses the hivdila. So you're mavdil in your mind because it's extra kedusha. So you have more of a respect, more of an appreciation.
That's right. Right. It highlights the significance of the Torah that it's protecting, so to speak. Very nice. Now, so he says you need a parochas because that's the way we do things. It's a minhag. Don't change it, even if it's more beautiful without it. Wow, it's a beautiful minhag that we don't mess around with. Fascinating. So the Trumas Hadeshim is a Rishon who lives earlier than the Zera Emes. And the question he's dealing with happens to be related to Hilchos Shabbos. As people used to take the parochas down and use it on Shabbos, I guess for the Torah or something like that. And he's not bothered by the Hilchos Shabbos elements that we can't really apply nowadays. You know, everything's so different with the way the curtains are used or whatever, and the hooks and stuff like that. But in the context of that tshuva, he writes, the parochas in front of the Aron, he says, there's a door behind the parochas. Ooh, there it is, black and white again. So it's funny because the truth is the doors are already kind of serving as like the halachic parochas. Meaning the Torah is already very much protected. It's already very much behind doors, literally. So what do you need this extra parochas for? He's saying that's for extra tznius. So what, do you need it anymore? Is there Abba than Yosef, yeah.
It's like when you get a gift and it's a beautiful wrapping. Like, is there ever parochas that's just plain? You look at it, beautiful lettering, beautiful pictures. It's almost like a wrapping to enhance what's inside.
Very nice. So Robert's asking, can you get away with like a bland, boring parochas? Seemingly not, because other achronim would call this hiddur mitzvah, meaning part of the parochas is to beautify the aron, which would then circle back and say, well, what if it's more beautiful without it? All right? So you have to have both sides, where you need it, apparently, even though it's not so clear why we need it, and it needs to beautify the aron also. And Baruch Hashem, you know, the midrash is nowadays, the aron is always beautified with the parochas. I literally can think of one base medrash, not in a shul, where they have this beautiful wooden door without a parochas. Now, that's not really used as a shul, so maybe it's a little different, but like I can think of one such example. Yosef. Yeah. That's it. So Yosef's saying we should just mimic the base of Mikdash, and Mikdash Ma'at should be a replica of the base of Mikdash. So just like there was a parochas in the base of Mikdash, we have a parochas that's most similar to the shul. Of course, yeah. Yeah, it's a Zeichel the Mikdash, and many Acharon and Poskim will present it that way. Like, they just take it for granted that the reason we have a parochas is to remember as a Zeichel to the original parochas, and that would seemingly explain why, even though we have a door, we need a parochas. Because the Aron had a box. I mean, it was a box that, so the Luchos were already protected. Yet, the Aron also needed a special parochas to cover it up, right? Meaning, if we wanted to be literal, so we would think that, you know, the Aron itself needs a covering. The doors. So you could say maybe the doors of the Aron are like the walls of the Aron and the Beis HaMikdash, and the parochas on the outside of the walls are like the parochas in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. So this comes down to Machlokes Shulchan Aruch Rama. Shulchan Aruch says, what's an example of Tashmish Kiddusha? So something that houses a mezuzah, the straps of your tefillin, you put a Sefer Torah in something, so that touches the Kiddusha itself. It's Tashmish Kiddusha, and guess what? He says, also the Vilon Shetolin Lifnei HaHeichal, the parochas. He says, that's Tashmish Kedusha. And the Mishnah Berurah says, not anymore. That was only back in the day when they used to use the parochas, apparently, as like some form of bima covering. And they would put the Torah on the bima with the parochas, like what we would do with the talis nowadays. You know, if you don't have the map or whatever, the covering for the bima. So the Mishnah Berurah says, that's the Shulchan Aruch's view, but it's not necessarily Shaykh anymore. And that's what the Ramah himself says. Just a few sifim later, the Ramah paskins, the parochas nowadays does not have the status of the Aron. It's just Kedusha is basic in essence. Again, that's no small deal. But the Ramah goes against the Shulchan Aruch and says nowadays, since the parochas doesn't directly touch the Torah, it doesn't have the status of Tashmish Kedusha, even though they used to use it directly on the Torah. Now, the Magen Avraham Mishnah Berurah, they deal with this question of, well, why do people use the parochas for a chuppah? Apparently there's such a concept. You should take the parochas and use it on top of the chasam and the kala. Apparently that's disrespectful. Why? Because it's still part of a shul, right? Meaning, you know, we don't mess with like kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe when we made the shul, it had in mind that we can use this for other, you know, things, whatever. All right, you know, that's a kasha. We don't do that anymore anyway. And the Bach, by the way, He deals with the Machlokes Rashi. Those we don't have to deal with it now, but he has a fascinating explanation of Rashi, the inside versus the outside. And he brings a minhag that nowadays people apparently, in his time rather, actually had maybe even two parochas, one on the inside of their own, one on the outside of their own, whatever, not for now. Okay, so that's just the technical kind of halachic status of the parochas. The Ramah, as we paskin, it does not have the status of Tashmish Kedusha. Doesn't mean you could throw it in the garbage necessarily. It's part of a shul. But it's not directly touching the Torah. It's not Tashmish Kedusha. Fascinating. Okay. The Aron, the parochas, rather, comes up in Hilchos Shabbos. How so? The parochas, which has letters on it. And every time you open it, you're taking apart the letters. And every time you close it, you're realigning, you're reuniting the letters. That's a machlokas. So, Shaila, whether you're writing halachically on Shabbos or erasing on Shabbos, similar to if you have a library book with the name of the library printed on the side margins. So every time you open the book, you're detaching the letters. Is that mochik? Is that kosev? Every time you close it. Ramosha Feinstein is lenient on this shaila. And he says, well, they're not mechubarin klal. They're not really interlocked. If you have two curtains that are adjacent to one another, but they're still kind of like waving in the air a little bit, they're not really connected. So that's not it's not usur, but he says, listen, they're close enough, so better to separate them a little bit before Shabbos. So imagine the Gabbai's job, Dr. Karp, every Erev Shabbos, he goes to shul, and he just separates the parochas, you know, a little bit, so the letters are already separated, so you don't have to worry about mochek or kosev shaylas. Right. And if you have to do psicha, you have to be careful.
Or but then something like this.
Rav Moshe writes, don't make a parochas like this. He thinks it's against the men of Klal Yisrael. He said, whoever heard of making a parochas with two halves? Now, Rav Shechter respectfully disagreed. What do we already learn this evening? In the second base of Migdash, how did they make the parochas? Two halves. So Rav Shechter... So there was an arm of space between them, right?
Right. The Kohen Gadol would walk on one side.
So you're saying it was like a maze, not side by side. Back at back. So, all right, I don't know enough about it. But Rav Moshe does not think that a quote-unquote normal parochas should involve two halves. It should be one sheet, one piece of material, whatever you want to call it, one, curtain. Because that's the minug, even without letters. But he doesn't think it's within the minug class. Fascinating. Okay, so we'll do a little bit of lumdus from the Rav, and then we'll end with some wild divrei shkafa from the Rav. The Rav points out that if you look at the Torah, the psukim highlight two distinct functions of the parochas. On one level, as we already learned this evening, the parochas serves as a barrier, as a mechitza between Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh. But if you go on to Parshas Tetzaveh, it's very clear that the Torah directly associates the parochas with the Aron itself. And the Rav says, look, it says, La parochas asher al ha'idut. And he says, look at the Rambam, without going into all the details, but here the Rambam, the Rambam will use the parochas as like, almost like a geographic boundary, where the Kohen Gadol is like considered to be enough lifnim to sprinkle the blood once he's got into the parochas. And the Rambam will also say, when you put the blood on the parochas, it's kineged ha'aron. So something that was kind of already intuitive to us this evening, the Rav just points out halachically in the Rambam, that the parochas serves as two distinct functions, both to create a distinction between where are we talking about in the Beis HaMikdash, and also it's directly part of the aron. And because the Rav asked, why do we have a parochas anymore? It used to make a distinction, a barrier between one part of the Beis HaMikdash and the other. We don't need that anymore. We don't have Kodesh or Kodesh or Kodesh. He says, you know why? Because it's part of the Aron itself. Meaning, it is a chelek of the Aron. I.e. Oh, that was my proof. I was becoming the Dr. Karp. The Rav says it's Muvan Inyan Parochas Sheh Samim Al Aron HaKodesh. Why do you put a Parochas in the Shul? Because in addition to a Mechitza, Yesh Bagam Din Vikium Ba'aron. And again, at a fancier level, the Imamish proves that the real Chazav Adi Shabbat Kippurim, more technical than that for now. Fascinating. I wanted to bring a little proof to the Rav by saying, if you look at the Gemara Menachos, it says that the staves, the big beams that you would put on the sides of the Aron to use to carry it, what does it say? That they would protrude a little bit out. You couldn't see them. But if you were to look at the parochas from the outside, you'd see two little bumps bumping out of the parochas. So what do you see? You can't separate the parochas and the aron. Literally, there was a protrusion. There were two little bumps coming out. So if you were to look, you'd see the badim of the aron kodesh sticking out. You couldn't see them because they were behind the curtain. But you can't separate the concept of a parochas from the aron. Wild. Okay. So I just thought that was a nice little raya to the Rav. Now, you're asking me to think about a parochas. Okay, we have a parochas. What did it look like? What was it made of? Kind of like, dry technical stuff, maybe. No. We had a nice little Shabbos Shaila, a nice longus on the Rav. And then it's Siv versus Tosfos. How thick was it, whatever? And then the Rav, in his Hashkafa, takes this to like a totally new dimension. And the dividing curtain shall separate for you between the holy and the holy of holies. Rav Soloveitchik, this is Rav Lustiger's Chumash, page 241. From the time I was young, I learned to restrain my feelings and not to demonstrate what was happening in my emotional world. My father would say that the holier and more intimate the feeling, the more it should be concealed. There is a hidden curtain that separates between one's interior and the exterior. What location is more sanctified than the inner sanctum of one's emotional life? If all is going well and one's heart overflows with happiness, he should reveal the deep interior of his soul to God, but he should not reveal it to others, lest a stranger profane his holy of holies. Whoa. He goes on. A stranger should not approach the holy of holies, lest in his apathy he profanes the sanctity of the mute pain that burdens the sufferer. Meaning if things are not going well in your own personal Kodesh Kodashim. But many Sifri Machshava compare a person to the Kodesh Kodashim, and we are like an Aron, and our Neshama is the Luchos, the Torah, etc. And the Rav saying that not everything needs to be revealed. You're allowed to have emotional privacy, and not everyone needs to be let in. You can have tznius, so to speak. And I don't know if there's a better lesson for our generation than that one. Now, maybe the Rav is coming from a very intense Litvish home that we don't agree with 1,000% of the time. However, we are way too transparent in this generation, where people share everything. Oh, I just sneezed. Let me go post that picture on social media, right? Let me go tell everybody where I went on my date and go tell the world. Could you put up a parochas for crying out loud? You know, the idea is that we have a lot to learn from this message that, you know what, in your inner world, you could put a parochas. Again, share it with your spouse, share it with your rebbe, share it with whoever you need to, who you need to let in. But maybe we would benefit from the parochas and not feel the burden to let everything so public. Maybe we would actually feel a little bit of relief if we knew that not everything that was so holy and sacred needed to be seen by everyone else. And maybe that would allow us to have more Kedusha when we actually realize how holy it really is, that it deserves a parochas. We should all be zochah to continue to treat our shuls with the holiness it deserves, and the parochas should remind us that there's so much Kedusha behind it.